This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. People have responded to the AIDS epidemic in many different ways. Writer Rebecca Brown decided to provide home care, first on a volunteer basis, then professionally. For 2 years, she took a break from writing to visit the homes of people with AIDS and do whatever she could to be of help. Her new novel, The Gifts of the Body, is based on those experiences. She told me about the things she did to help people with AIDS.
Do their laundry, clean their bathroom, wash their toilets, clean out the refrigerator, pour them a glass of juice, lift their head up when they need you to hold their head so they can drink something out of a straw, change their TV channel for them if they don't have a remote, and there's a lot of listening. I think when these folks that I was dealing with were getting near the end of their lives, they had a lot of things they were thinking about. And sometimes it's easier to say those things to a stranger than someone in your family. Or there's a kind of intimacy you get if you know someone well enough to, like, you know, help them change their clothes, that in the act of that they'll say, well, you know, I've been thinking about something. And so it's very, very close. In many ways, easy work, but in many ways, I don't know, just really, really deep and rewarding. At least it was for me.
What you're saying reminds me of a passage that I want you to read. This is a passage about somebody who is planning on going into hospice, but after the home care worker arrives, he decides, no, that he wants to stay home.
Yeah.
Putting the home care worker in a tough spot. Let me ask you to read that passage for us.
Yeah. It's a passage from a chapter called The Gift of Tears. And the guy we're talking about is a fellow named Ed, who the home care worker's been working with for a while. And Ed's a great guy, but he's a little testy, and he's scared, you know, of dying and of the prospect of what's going to happen to him. And he has this really blustery kind of, I don't care, I'm a tough guy, I can handle it kind of thing. So anyway, the home care worker, the eye narrator, is watching TV with Ed, and she's just brought him his breakfast, which is oatmeal and stuff. And they've been waiting for this call from the hospice to say, okay, Ed, we've got a room. So Ed gets the call and asks the home care worker to leave the room so he can talk to the hospice people himself. And when she comes back to the room, this is where the scene begins. I'm not going, Ed said. I told him I might come later. He stared straight at me. You can't force me to go. No one's trying to force you, Ed. We just thought. I don't care what you just thought, Ed said. I don't care what any of you, my case manager or my doctors or any of those 55,000 idiot nurses or idiot orderlies or any of you idiot do-gooders think. I'm not going. In training, they said if they ever got verbally or physically abusive, you should leave. But this wasn't that. Ed's face looked tight. His hands were gripping the remote control of the TV so tight he was shaking. His knuckles were white. I'm sorry, Ed, I said. It took him a few seconds. Then he said, you don't know what it's like. I know I don't, Ed. I'm sorry. Ed's mouth moved. He picked his spoon up off the napkin. The oatmeal hadn't been touched. He held the spoon in his fist like a baby who can't hold it in his fingers yet. His mouth was shut tight. His eyelids were red. He put the spoon towards the oatmeal. A skin had formed on the surface. He stuck the spoon through the skin. He made a noise like he was starting to cry. Oh, Ed, I said. He put his hands against the bowl like he wanted to push it away. I moved to push it away. No, leave it, he sobbed. I can eat it. I want to eat it. Do you want me to heat it up, I said, or make you a new bowl? His lips were pressed very tight. The edges of them looked white. I don't know, he sniffed. I don't know. I don't know. He dropped his spoon and put his face in his hands. His shoulder shook. I touched his shoulder. He dropped his hands from his face and looked at me. His face and eyes were red. His mouth was moving. The rest of him was trying to cry, but something was wrong with his tear ducts, and he couldn't.
Rebecca, is that passage based on something that happened to you?
This Ed character is pretty closely based on the personality of a man I worked really closely with. And he had an opportunity to go to a hospice that really he was in two minds about, because it was so hard for him to stay at home. But, you know, once they say you got the room at the hospice, it's like in order to get a room at the hospice, you have to, like, have a note from your doctor saying you have less than 6 months to live, right? So once you say, I'm going to the hospice, it's like I'm dead in 6 months. And he didn't really want to say that. So it was really hard for him. And he wanted so much to fight it. And he did, but you can only fight it so long, really. So in real life, he did go to the hospice, and in real life, he's passed away. And, you know, bless his heart. So, yeah, it was based on someone I knew.
There's a passage from your novel, The Gifts of the Body, that I'd like you to read about a home care worker visiting a patient with lesions.
Yeah. This chapter is from, it's called The Gift of Sight, and she's the home care worker is being a substitute helper for this guy who's not a regular client of hers. This guy was the scariest to look at. This guy really looked like the plague. Margaret had said the only special thing I'd need to do was put a salve on him. The salve was thick, opaque, yellowish jelly. It came in a big, wide-mouthed plastic jar. It didn't smell like anything. The first time I went there and opened the jar, I saw the tracks of someone else's fingers where they'd gone in to get the salve. I don't know why it frightened me so much, but it did. I was afraid to touch him. I was afraid to look at him. His sores were dark purple and about the size of quarters. The edges of them were yellow, and his skin was dark brown. The sores weren't running or oozy or scabs because they always had this salve on them. I was allowed to put on the salve, even though I wasn't allowed to give meds, because this salve wasn't really a med so much as something just to comfort. It couldn't heal anything. I don't know if the sores were itchy or hot or how exactly they felt bad to him, but I didn't ask. I hadn't been scared to ask about anything before, of nurses or docs or my supervisor or the guys themselves. The guys especially liked to explain things. They liked that I asked and that they could tell me what they knew. They'd all become experts. The first time I put the salve on, I didn't know if the temperature of it would be uncomfortable, like when massage oil, if it isn't skin temperature, feels so cold that you can't feel the good. I wanted to ask him, but I couldn't. I couldn't say anything out loud about the sores.
Is this what it was like for you, Rebecca, the first time you had a client who had sores that you needed to apply ointment on?
Yeah, this one is certainly autobiographical about my experience with it. KS is a really frightening thing to look at, and your heart just breaks when you see these people that have it. But yeah, I was scared. It was really scary looking to me. Even though I knew I couldn't get it, and I was following safe procedures with my gloves and everything, it's an ugly, frightening-looking symptom of the disease.
My guest is Rebecca Brown. Her new novel, The Gifts of the Body, is based on her 2 years as a home care worker helping people with AIDS. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is writer and former home care worker Rebecca Brown. Did you never know when somebody was going to be embarrassed by something and when they would not be? Particularly in terms of like loss of body control and sores and lesions, things that are difficult to see.
Yeah, well, sometimes somebody's embarrassment would be obvious. You know, when somebody would say, look, I'm incontinent, I'm really embarrassed, can you change my diaper? And other times they'd say, can you change my diaper? And they wouldn't say I'm embarrassed, but I would just kind of assume they were, because I would be. But then there's another point at which, you know, some of these people are living with this disease for so long that they're beyond embarrassment. You know, they're basically just trying to live and be able to talk to their friends or to be able to die with some kind of comfort. I mean, on the one hand, embarrassment is a real luxurious feeling. You can feel embarrassment if you're not completely racked with pain. So sometimes I felt I knew because they would tell me, and other times I'd say, geez, I don't know what these people are feeling. I don't have this disease. And I just kind of have to take cues from them.
In all the work that you had to do, what was most difficult for you to do?
I guess I always felt like whenever these people died, that was the saddest thing. I never got to the point that it was like okay for them to go. And in some ways, I always felt like I and the world was abandoning them. You know, we hadn't found the cure quick enough, or I hadn't comforted them enough, which is completely crazy. I mean, you do what you can do, but I never got to the point that it was, for me, okay that these people died. They died, and it still always saddened me. And that's really why I had to stop doing the work, when those feelings kind of started getting in the way of the practical help I was able to be to these people.
Did you have to learn a way to lift people up and carry them to the bath?
Yeah. Before I started doing volunteer work with this local organization, there was a weekend training session in which we're taught about universal precautions and the kinds of foods these folks like to eat and you know, things to look out for. And as I moved from being a volunteer to doing this as a quote professional, I underwent another training in which we learned how to, you know, move people in and out of wheelchairs and help people move in and out of baths and use a bath seat. And so there is a lot of just basic physical training that was very necessary for me to learn that you don't just pick someone up, that you're very careful about how you hold them and where the strong and weak points are.
When you were doing home care work, did you find that there are certain things you could do for a person with AIDS that their family or friends or a lover might be uncomfortable doing?
Absolutely. And again, it depends on the person you're dealing with. Some people, you know, some of the folks with AIDS don't want a stranger dealing with them in these really intimate, give them a bath kind of ways. And there were other people that, well, for example, there's a character in the book who's a mom and a grandmom, and she just, it's so hard for her to allow her kids or her grandkids to give her a bath or to do the things that she did to them when they were babies. And that somehow if a stranger does it, it's easier. Rather than to have someone who knew your body when it was full and beautiful and capable take care of it when it's ailing and falling apart.
Did most of the people who you cared for have friends or family who could help them?
Some of them did, and then some of them, and this was a really sad thing, there were some people that, as far as I could tell, you know, didn't really have friends or family, and the caregivers really became their family, the people they saw every day. And one fellow actually said to me, I mean, here's a guy dying of AIDS. He was at the end of his life, and he just said, oh, all of you caregivers have just been my best friends, and it's such a blessing to have met all these nice people when I've been sick. And I was like, you'd break your heart to hear that. but he, you know, he was learning a lot about love at the end of his life and teaching a lot about love, too.
Did you find in a way that it was easier to be physically intimate with the strangers who you had a professional relationship with than with friends who you're close with?
Yes. Yeah. When they became sick, I was already really emotionally involved with them. And everything in my body was saying, don't die, don't die. Whereas with the professional relationship with the clients, I knew they were going to die. And I was like trying to help them do that in the way that they wanted to. And with my friends, it was like, look, you can't do this.
Is there a shyness, too, when it's somebody who you already know well as opposed to, again, the professional relationship?
Yeah. And a lot of times those folks want to use strangers from these agencies that I've worked with, and it makes perfect sense to me, you know, that they don't want their friends dealing with their messes. You know, they want us to, you know, do the medical errands or, you know, come bring over a bottle of sparkling cider and watch TV with them, but they want someone else to do the diapers and the bedpans. And I understand that.
Well, it must be nice to have eyes you can look into without feeling that you're seeing the parts of yourself that you're most embarrassed about reflected back at you.
I suppose. It's like being really basically human. It's like being a baby again, but being sentient, you know, that our bodies are precious and they're incredibly messy. and being embarrassed about the body we inhabit.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Rebecca Brown's new novel is called The Gifts of the Body. This is Fresh Air.